thank you. Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it is my pleasure to welcome you to today's session. We'll be having a conversation with Mayor Stephanie Miner. First, though, as always, a few announcements. I saw a few of you on Tuesday night at Lemoyne College at our intelligent conversation on healthcare reform. Professor Grant Reher was there, and I think that those of you who participated in that session will agree that it was a very illuminating conversation. And one of the things that Professor Reher ended the conversation with is no matter what you think about healthcare reform or this particular healthcare reform bill that we have now, you have to agree that the anticipated growth in healthcare is got to be good for Central New York, because as we know, the economy of Syracuse and Central New York is very heavily invested in eds and meds, and if you saw this morning's paper, certainly bears that out on the construction end of things. But I wanted to remind you that in a couple of weeks on April 27th, we'll be continuing that conversation on controlling healthcare costs. It will be a variation of the conversation we had with Deborah Freund here a few weeks ago, but she'll be joined by Dr. James Longo, who's the medical director of the Physician Assistant Studies Program at Lemoyne. So that's April 27th. It's a Tuesday at 7 p.m. at Lemoyne. So I urge you to join us then. Next week, of course, will be the 40th anniversary of Earth Day. Can you believe it? Of course, I was much too young to remember it. But be that as it may, I chose a topic that maybe wasn't in the news 40 years ago, but is in the news a bit today, and that is hydrofracking. And we have two folks who will be talking about it. It won't be a debate. It will be a discussion. Bruce Selleck, who's a professor of geology at Colgate, and Dareth Glantz, who's the executive director of the Coalition of Citizens for the Environment. So that's next week, and so I urge you to come and bring your questions then. Right now, I would like to welcome a few members. You may have new members, some of our newest regulars. Say hello to Marion Irvin, who's been coming around. Marion is a civic volunteer extraordinaire, and I know many of you already know Marion. Raise your hand. Scott Butler, some of you might, as I do, might remember Scott from WCNY days, but now he is a special assistant with Senator David Valesky's office, Scott. And right next to Scott is Bay Muhammad, who is the regional director of the New York State Senate office here in Syracuse. And again, with many civic and community volunteer efforts behind them, Deborah Willis, is Deborah here today? Didn't get anyway. When Deborah is here and a few other members, I will introduce them. But make sure that you do get to know new folks and make them feel welcome. Well, as someone who, in spite of the fact that I don't remember 1970 so well, as someone who worked in city government in the 1970s and the 1980s under a strong mayor with a colorful personality, a very strong and inspirational and creative department head, and alongside many, many dedicated public servants. I don't know if that's a phrase that we use so much these days, but I think it's very important, the public servants, the people who work in municipal government. I think I have an appreciation for some of the challenges that the mayor and the administration are facing today, some of the challenges that maybe were just really starting to peak and maybe haven't quite peaked, issues about tax base and suburban sprawl and intergovernmental relations that are only getting more and more intense today. But we know that the key is when you have a challenge to turn it into an opportunity. And I know that we all look forward to hearing about the opportunities that the city is going to be taking advantage of in the coming days. So it's my pleasure to introduce to you today Stephanie Mayer Miner, the 53rd mayor of the city of Syracuse. Just briefly, Stephanie, of course, just took office in January. She graduated from SU in 92, worked for then-Governor Mario Cuomo, went to Buffalo Law School, joined a local firm, was a counselor at large from 2001 through 2009, and welcome, Mayor Miner.
Thank you very much. I will tell you that I'm, I guess at last count, about 105 days into my administration. And to describe what the last 105 days has been like, would it's really been akin to running a 100-yard dash every day, and when you get to yard 90, they move the ribbon, and they put in another 100 yards, and they say, keep going, really, after you get through this barrier, after you get through this obstacle, it'll get much easier, much less hectic. It has not gotten less hectic. And it certainly has not gotten easier. I would and do not expect it to get easier, and nor, frankly, would I want it to be easier. There is a luxury, and perhaps it is the only luxury, of being in a position during extremely difficult times that you can change behavior and you can make people make decisions that they otherwise would not make and make people focus on things that they otherwise would not focus on. I have been thinking a lot about that every day as we go through and make these very, very difficult choices. And what I have said to people as I've talked to them about my rationale and where I think we should be going and the choices that we're making is that when you don't have any easy choices, and nobody in government has any easy choices anymore, then you might as well do the right thing. And if you're going to alienate everybody, you might as well make sure that you're doing it for the right reason. And we're doing that a lot these days. I just, as Sandra said in her introduction, I heard as I was walking up a couple of people chuckle about Stephanie Mayer Miner. Mayer is not my middle name. And for a very long time, when people would say, Mayer, I wouldn't look. And in fact, then I wouldn't look at all. And then I started to look for Tom Young over my shoulder. And then I, in February, on one very snowy Friday afternoon, I got a phone call from my corporation counsel, and she said to me, we've got a problem. Well, you know, I'd been mayor for 6 weeks. Every phone call from my commissioners starts off the same way. We've got a problem. She, I said, okay, well, what is it? She said, I can't even explain this to you. You better get out here. So I went out to Franklin Square and stared across I-81 and saw a building collapsed and a huge, huge piece of it missing. It was breathtaking. And as luck would have it, as I was standing there looking at it, thinking to myself, all I wanted to do was to get to 5:30 so I could have a beer. And it's 3:30, and I don't know what I'm going to do about this. And as luck would have it, my cell phone rang, or my BlackBerry, and Marilyn Townley, who is, we refer to her in glowing terms as the grown-up in the mayor's office, said to me, Mayor, Governor Patterson is looking for you. Well, I'm looking for him, too, right about now. So the governor, I got in touch with the governor, and he said to me, you know, Stephanie, I wish we could have spent more time together. I was really looking forward, but I've decided not to run for re-election. And I said to him, Governor, I feel terrible for your family, and I hope that one day you will be able to come to a place where you are truly at peace with this decision. Pause, 3 seconds. But I need your help right now. He said to me, Stephanie, I'm going into a press conference to announce I'm not running for governor. I really can't talk to you right now. I said, Governor, I'm looking at a building that's collapsing and is threatening I-81 right now. And he said, oh, my God, I will have somebody call you immediately. And true to his word, within arguably 2 minutes, I got a call from the governor's staff who thought that there was a massacre in Syracuse because he had gotten called out of the press conference. And accordingly, he's thinking to himself, here, my boss is not going to run for re-election. Really, the whole world as I know it is, you know, now ending, and I can't even have a moment of solitude to lick my wounds as I watch this go on. Instead, I got to go to Syracuse. And he called me, and I told him, and he said, we're going to do all that we can for you to help you. And he said, if it threatens 81, then it will be the DOT's responsibility. And I said to him, there is no question that this building is threatening 81. So started essentially a three-week drama in which I learned firsthand about intergovernmental relations and about holding your ground and about the fact that when you don't have any easy choices, then you might as well do the right thing. The state DOT, and for lack of a better word, I will simply use the word bureaucrats, called my staff and said, yeah, we understand that, you know, the governor's people said some things, but we want you to take it down and we'll figure out how to pay for it later and figure out the costs. And the deputy mayor came to see me about this, and I said, no, we can't do it. We can't take an IOU from the state. And at that point, we had believed, with reason, that the building was going to cost about $1 million to take down because it had hazardous material in it. So the deputy mayor said to me, you want me to tell the state no? I said, oh, yeah, I want you to tell the state no. So he got on the phone and he said, I've spoken with the mayor, and the mayor said no. She will not accept an IOU. She will not work it out later. And the commissioner said, are you telling New York State's Department of Transportation no? And he said, I'm telling you the mayor told me to say no. And for 3 weeks, you know, we wrangled back and forth. And at the end of this process, what I knew and what I had learned and what had been confirmed for me was that we are no longer in a position where we can just say, let's do the easy thing first and figure it out later. Now, 60 or 50,000 people a day were impacted by that decision. Those of you who live in Cicero and Liverpool, sorry. But the reality is that we in the city of Syracuse have an extraordinarily large structural budget deficit. And we are no longer at a point where you can just say, we'll pay the money and figure it out later. There were a number of people who said to me at that time, you know, if you really wanted to be like Lee Alexander, in the best senses of the word, what you would do is go down there and get into the crane yourself and swing it and have your picture taken in front of it and saying, this is a mayor, I am taking bold action and opening up 81. And I said, look, I want to be like Lee Alexander in the best senses of the word, but we don't have a world or financial condition where we can do that anymore. So we're going to have to buckle down, everybody, and deal with, you know, derogatory newspaper headlines about commuters held hostage, deal with people from the northern suburbs being very angry and frustrated, deal with the reality that perhaps the Sweet 16 for the regionals would be impacted by this. Because at the end of the day, what we need to be concerned about is who can pay this and who is in the best position to do it. And the people in the city of Syracuse can no longer do that. That was a very sexy challenge that played out in the newspapers every day. But we have challenges that you don't read about in the newspaper. We in the city of Syracuse are rethinking government every day. And this happened before I became mayor during the transition period, where we got together with the new commissioner, and he said to me and to the deputy mayor when we offered him the job, he said, great, I love the job. Mayor, we've got some problems. As I said to you, all my commissioners start off every conversation with me, Mayor, we've got some problems. And when we started to unpack these problems, what we realized was that we were spending an extraordinarily large amount of money on administrative costs and as a result, we were shortchanging housing policy in the neighborhoods. We changed that. That was not an easy decision. As a result of that decision, people had to be let go. As a result of that decision, my current Commissioner of Neighborhood and Business Development is doing as much work with half the staff. We merged economic development into that staff, and we have been saying to neighbors and other people in the city, look, the way that we did things before is not the way that we're going to continue to do it. We now have a housing plan, the draft of a housing plan, and we're saying that's going to be our blueprint for how we make decisions. They're no longer going to be ad hoc. As a result of that, you're going to understand the rationale by which housing decisions are made, but you are also going to not have the flexibility that you once had to just run into the office and say, oh my God, you know, I saw a great deal here and I want to buy this house and renovate it. No surprise, some of those decisions have been greeted more warmly than others. But again, as I hearken back to what I said earlier, when you are in the position that the city of Syracuse is in, the easiest thing to do is to make the right decision so that you can say, we have to rethink government and move to make sure that we are providing services in the most efficient and effective way. The biggest challenge that we in the city of Syracuse have is our fiscal situation. No surprise to any of you here, because I know that this is a very well-read crowd, our revenues are declining every day and under threat. New York State has significantly cut us back, even in midterm. They are our single largest provider of revenues. Our second largest provider is Onondaga County with the sales tax, which I'm going to come back to. But there's also another side of the budget, and that is expenditures. And I want to just talk to you for a second about what we've done in expenditures. I have been in office, as I said, about 105 days. Our personnel costs are down 5%. We have eliminated or proposed to eliminate in the 105 days that I have been in office, roughly 100 jobs. The budget that I presented to the Common Council last week is not a zero growth budget, it's a negative growth budget. Nevertheless, despite all of those things that we have done on the expenditure side, we still had to make the very difficult choice of raising taxes and water fees in order to balance our budget, because the costs that we can't control, pension costs, health care costs, there's nothing that we can do. We have to pay those bills. So in a time where I was loath to do this because I understand how difficult it is, particularly for families in the city of Syracuse, we were at a position where we were talking about significant service cuts or raising these taxes and fees. The budget that I presented to the Common Council is based on the governor's budget for state revenues, and it is also based on our current receipt of the current receipt of sales tax that we receive from Onondaga County, which is on the city side approximately $65 million. The sales tax is being debated. In fact, as we speak, the sales tax committee is meeting and is going to be voting on proposals. The county executive and I and a number of county legislators have had a series of discussions about sales tax since January. What I have said to the county legislature and what I've said in public is, because there is no easy decision, let's think about making these choices to position our community for growth in the future. If there is any one issue that unites this entire region, county, it is economic development. And our failure to have any sort of real economic development at all, our job growth has flatlined, our per capita income has declined. At the same time, we have hired and spent millions of dollars on consultants to come in and tell us why this is. And they have all, and one of them, you weren't hired, but the Citizens League did a study, and I know the Citizens League is associated very closely with Thursday Morning Roundtable. the Citizens League, MDA, 2020, you name it. Everybody has opined on this issue. And they all have the same two recommendations, or they point out the same two trends. The first is that we as a community have failed to highlight or failed to utilize EDS and MEDS as a true economic development tool. That represents our best hope for true meaningful economic development. The second finding that they all point to is we have too much government in this community. And the sales tax debate plays into that in a number of ways. The first is, I've done some research on sales tax, and 20 years ago, when the county legislature took away the, 20 years ago, the city of Syracuse was getting 31% of the sales tax revenue. And they dropped it significantly. And what they did with the difference is they gave it for the first time to towns and villages. I don't know if that was the first time they gave it to school districts, but they gave money to the towns and villages 20 years ago, and they took it out of the city's supply. In that 20-year increment period, we have seen the city of Syracuse has gone down 175 jobs. We have constricted our government level. I would also argue that you have seen the city of Syracuse start its slow but steady decline, benchmarked at 1990. In the same time, town government, village government, and fire district government has gone up by 60%. At the same time, we have seen the private sector completely and totally constrict, to the point where the third largest employer in the region is Onondaga County. Now, I say this to you, and I've said this to other people, where are we going as a region or a community when we have allowed our private sector jobs and economy to shrink to the point where it's flatlined, and we have allowed the public sector and government to increase at a rate of 60%? The answer, of course, I believe, is no place good. Sales tax represents an opportunity to change that dynamic. The county executive and I have worked on a proposal and negotiated a proposal whereby the school districts would get a smaller share of it, but they would get it for the entire 10 years. The city would eventually get 25%, but we would, from our share, wean off the towns and villages, and Onondaga County would eventually get 75%. And the idea is, behind doing this, is all of the EDS and MEDS, which represents all of our job growth, are located within the city of Syracuse. They're all nonprofits. We in the city of Syracuse provide them three of our most expensive services: DPW, which is road cleaning and sanitation, police, and fire. If the county legislature takes away our share of the sales tax, then we will have no choice but to cut back our services. And I want you all to think about that for a second. A number of you here drove into the city of Syracuse to listen to me speak, or actually were right on the line, drove into DeWitt, but close enough that many of you will be going into Syracuse or will today. 62,000 people a day commute into the city of Syracuse to go to work. That is capable because of the Department of Public Works that the city of Syracuse maintains. During snowstorms that we frequently have here, it is our Department of Public Works that works two shifts of 12-hour shifts, 24 hours a day, to make sure that the roads are clean and salted so you can get to work or you can get to the hospitals in this area. Or, at the end of February, you can go see Syracuse University and Villanova play basketball and break a record, because of our Department of Public Works. If they cut our sales tax, we will no longer be able to do that. If we are no longer able to provide those services, then what is St. Joe's Hospital going to do in terms of all of the work that they are doing and expansion that they are doing? What is Dr. Smith, our number one employer, SUNY Upstate, going to do with his biotech center at Kennedy, the former Kennedy Square? What about Nancy Cantor and the Center of Excellence? What are they going to do? That, folks, is where our job growth is. And the county legislature is in a very difficult position. in which I've said to a number of them, welcome to my world. They have to choose how they're they have to choose between very tough, politically tough alternatives. And they're not sure how to do that. In which I have said to them, and the county executive has also said to them, why not do it so that you are leaders? Why not do it so you can say, we have a future in this community, we are going to position ourselves for economic growth, we are going to give the city not exactly what it needs, but enough to survive, and at the same time, we are going to make sure that the towns and villages are open and honest with the people who live there about how much their services cost, which will then foster a discussion about consolidation that candidly is happening already. Clay has done it with its police force. Cicero is talking about it. Everybody's talking about it. It's a case that is not unique in government where the people are ahead of the leadership. But the county legislature is not, candidly, is not there yet. And they have a proposal that they, through intermediaries, shared with me yesterday that would require this, would cut the city's sales tax revenue by $17 million. I said, that's Armageddon. And I don't know what it is that they don't understand yet. I have said to them, where do you think that the doctors who go to work at SUNY Upstate and Krause and St. Joe's live? By and large, they don't live in the city of Syracuse. Where do you think those 34,000 people who come to go to the Dome for SU and Villanova live? They don't live in the city of Syracuse. When we take $50,000 unreimbursed costs and say to the NCAA, this is, we will pay for policing for the Sweet 16 and get people from West Virginia and Kentucky and every place else, we don't get any money for that. They come and stay at hotels, and Onondaga County gets the hotel tax. I'm not asking for the hotel tax. I'm not asking for any of that. What I am saying is understand that sales tax revenue allows us to provide services, that allows economic development in this community. That is the number one issue for all of us. The number two issue is, regardless of sales tax, we all in this community have to rethink government. And those of you who, and I've only heard this, I've never heard this from actual suburban residents, I've only heard it from suburban government folks. They say, you know, people in my town and village, they say, hey, we don't mind for paying for our services because we get great services and it doesn't cost that much. And that's false, because you have no idea how much it costs, because the towns and villages take their sales tax and they put it up against their property tax bill, and then they lower the property tax bill. Now, it's really a very easy choice. Do we want to use sales tax to prop up local government, or do we want to use sales tax for job development and economic growth? I have and will continue to do all that I can as mayor of the city to continue to make that argument. But I need all of you, not in general, to say, yes, we support the mayor and the county executive, but particularly, I need you to pick up the phone and call your county legislators and say, support the mayor and the county executive's proposal. We want to foster economic development, and we want to foster consolidation and modernization. And it's time for this community to move in a forward direction and make hard choices. Let us not be victims of the parochialism of the past, because if we do, to paraphrase, we will just simply continue to repeat and have the same things that we have always had, which I ran for mayor, and I know the county executive ran for county executive, saying, we don't want that anymore. We want change. We want growth. We want change. And we have the opportunity now within our grasp to do that. And let me add one other thing about sales tax, so it's important for everyone to recognize this. The city of Syracuse currently gets 26% of the sales tax revenue. I have negotiated an agreement with the county executive where we get 25%. So right off the bat, we are taking a cut. I'm not saying don't cut us at all. I could make that argument, but I'm saying, look, I understand that the county has a significant Medicaid and mandated cost burden, and I want to help try to solve that. in terms of intergovernmental cooperation and understanding that we are all in this together. So right off the bat, we're taking a 1% cut in our negotiated agreement, number one. Number two, even if we got that 25% sales tax revenue, that does not close the city of Syracuse's statutory deficit or our problems that we have. And in fact, we are going to continue ourselves to talk about modernization, rethinking government, and consolidation. We have already done that. In my first 100 days in office, I have announced to the county executive that we are co-locating our economic development office. We have a meeting weekly. I don't participate in it, but we have a weekly meeting between the county staff regarding their green infrastructure and the city's staff, our engineering and sewer and planning people, to facilitate and make sure that we are moving as quickly as possible. I have started a rent-a-firefighter program to say, which I believe is the first step into an eventual goal of having a municipal uniform services. It makes no sense to me that we have 32 different fire departments and 32 or 64 different police departments. We should have one municipal fire department and one municipal police department. And a first step towards doing that is saying we in the city of Syracuse have the highest rated professional fire department in New York State. So those of you in the suburbs should take advantage of that, and we want to help you do that. And by doing that, we can become more efficient with how we spend our very, very tight resources on fire protection. We are no longer at a place where we can afford to have 60% growth in fire districts. Just, it makes no sense for us as a community, because all those dollars that you are spending on fire districts, you are taking away from economic development, education, infrastructure, all of those other very, very important things. So I would like to open it up to questions, because I know that this group is going to have some great questions and better questions than I could wax on. So without further ado, let me take some questions here.
Are you going to make liars out of us? Okay.
Good morning, Mayor. Thank you. I live in your neighborhood, and I am concerned because recently we tried to make a very minor improvement to our property, and it was a three-month process through the Board of Zoning Appeals. It seems to me there's some opportunities there without jeopardizing the housing stock to give your professional staff a little more authority to make decisions that seem to be pretty minor. So I wonder if that's an area. No pun intended. Yeah.
I absolutely agree with you, and part of what we have done in the first 100 days is we have opened up a permit consultation office, a one-stop shopping, so that when developers or homeowners want to pull a permit or do some improvement, they can go in and have experts from DPW, from police, from fire, from zoning, all there to tell you what the process is going to be like, or all the paperwork that you have to have, or even to say to you, you know, you want to put a 6-foot fence up? If you put a 4-foot fence up, then you don't have to go through zoning, and that will eliminate 3 months. I agree with you that it's a really very archaic process. Zoning is a consolidated operation, folks. It's between the city and county. And part of our frustration is that the zoning code that the city of Syracuse currently has is antiquated and outdated and very old. I made that point there. We have a plan to change our zoning laws, but the first step towards doing that is to have a consolidated plan, and we are going forward to the Common Council to do that. And then after we do that, we will be looking for grant funding to update our zoning. In the meantime, what we are trying to do is to have city personnel there available on stop to consult in the process. But I agree that I used to wail about this as a common counselor. People would come and say, you know, they wanted to put a deck or something on the front of their house. And I'd look, by the time it got to the common council, they had put the paperwork in 4 months ago. And I'd say, are you kidding me? It takes 4 months for us to go through this process? You know, we got a lot of excuses. And so now the worst of all possible worlds has occurred, that the common counselor used to make the most noise is now the mayor. So we are working on that process, and both from a structural standpoint in terms of the end result changing the law, but also from a procedural standpoint in trying to make sure that we can steer you away from the quagmire that becomes the Board of Zoning Appeals often. Through no fault of their own, they're just trying to follow the law.
Here's a kudu. The last week, the Post Standard spoke about potholes. Sunday or Monday, they spoke about Nottingham Road being in bad shape. Encouraged by that, Tuesday, I called the city line and told them about a pothole on Acorn Path. The following day, yesterday, I drove on that street, and the pothole was fixed. This morning, I drove here, and Nottingham was fixed. If you keep this up, you're going to be reelected, and the DPW commissioner will be rehired in the second term. But a suggestion: this is a win-win. During the last administration, we had 12 miles of bike lanes that were laid down in the city of Syracuse. And that was the first bike lanes that were put in since Mayor Alexander was around. What we find, though, is that they're usually put in September and October, so that they're not too useful during the summer. And in fact, over the winter, because of the new paint you use, they don't last. I'd like to suggest that you do it, you put the bike lanes in April and May, and you'll have a whole summer of use.
John, here's the deal I will make with you, and I will make with everyone in this audience. If you have requests for me like that, if you call your county legislators or you write all of them a letter opining and telling them how important a healthy city is to this region, we can do those kind of things. And I only say this, I'm not saying it facetiously at all, but we can do that. I mean, that's easy. We can do it. But if the county legislature cuts me $17 million, we can't do anything. And so you want to talk about being in a brave new world where cities are on the forefront of social experimentation and government and healthy lifestyles? We're right there. I mean, Mike Bloomberg in New York, Richard Daley in Chicago, and Cory Booker in Newark are doing amazing, interesting, innovative things. We in Syracuse can do it too, but not if they force the city to its knees and force us to bankruptcy, because then we will be at a point where we are trying to figure out, you know, how do we do it with half of a police force and half of a fire department, and we won't have any DPW, and we certainly won't have any parks department. So what you need to do is, I see the deputy mayor here has arrived. You'll notice that he came in a little bit late. That's all right, Chief. Don't worry about it. I wasn't noticing demerits. You can talk to the chief, or you could talk to the Andrew Maxwell. Andy, why don't you stand up there so everyone can see you? Andrew is the head of my planning and sustainability. We call him Captain Planet in our office. And he is all over that stuff, John. If it can be done, he will do it. But part of what he's going to come and say to me is, Mayor, I need you to give me the authorization to do this. And then he's going to say, and here's what it's going to cost. And if I'm at a place in sales tax where I don't have the support of people like you, I'm not going to have the time to say to him, yes, Andrew, let's talk about bike lanes. I'm going to say to him, Andrew, you kidding me? We're fighting for survival. But if all of you are calling those county legislators and I'm running into them and the county executive is running into them and they're saying, you know, yeah, we heard from people about this, then that's going to give me more time and I'm going to be able to focus on it and say, yeah, we can be on the cutting edge of these kind of great things that we can do. Because I was fortunate enough to in January, I was invited to the U.S. Conference of Mayors. They had a meeting in the White House, and it was, you know, all very, very exciting. I kept looking around to see if the Marine Corps guard was going to kick me out and be like, you don't belong here. Get out of here. At the time, I got there early, and I turned around, and there was Richard Daley from Chicago, and I said, oh, Mayor Daley. And he said, oh, Stephanie, you're from Syracuse. I said, yeah. He said, I had a name tag on. He didn't, like, read the clips or anything. Yeah. I had a name tag on, and he said, how long have you been mayor? I said, 21 days. He said, 21 days? That's fantastic. He said, you know, cities are on the future of how we as a country are going to solve our problems. Cities like Chicago, Cleveland, and Syracuse, we can really change urban public education and sustainability and lifestyles. And I thought to myself, Chicago, Cleveland, Syracuse, all right, I'm there. He's absolutely right. Those of you who are interested in urban planning or where we as a country are going, you will see that the people who are doing the most interesting work are mayors and cities. And it's not work, Democratic work or Republican work, it's work solving problems. Because ultimately, that's what a good mayor does, is solve problems.
If you're successful in promoting economic growth in the hospitals or consolidated government, there's going to be even more property removed from the tax rolls in the city of Syracuse. As the hospitals expand, you lose housing, for instance. So I'm wondering to what extent you've given serious thought to the idea of a commuter tax on the people coming into work.
I have not given it serious thought because I think that would be a regressive choice for us in this community to make. I don't think that we can tax our way out of the problems that we have, that instead we need to think about the real solution to our problems is growth. And how can we get growth and how do we support that? And part of by doing that is recognizing that the city of Syracuse is in a unique position because we house the engines of economic development, we house the cultural attractions, we house the government center, we house all of those things. Many of them don't pay property taxes, so offset it with sales tax. But let me say that there are others in city government who are giving it serious consideration. And if the county legislators do not recognize that or do not understand the importance that the city plays in the regional economy, and they try to bring us to bankruptcy, and I don't think they're trying to do it deliberately. I think they're doing it because they are not used to making very tough choices. Then it may be out of my control.
Mayor, I live in Skaneateles. We have a fire department that could handle fires in New York City and Chicago, and we really don't need them. Could you expand a little bit on your plan for how you can consolidate all of the fire departments in the various parts of the county?
Yes, as long as you promise me to call your county legislator, who happens to be somebody of particular importance, the chairman. The idea is, and my deputy mayor, as all of you know, is a heralded former fire chief, and it was really his idea. So I will give him credit this one time, even though he arrived late. It was really his idea, and he said, look, it's very simple. We have trained personnel, and what does it really matter if the patch on their shoulder says City of Syracuse or if it says Skaneateles? So why not start with, there's a misnomer, volunteer fire departments. So you think volunteer fire departments, they don't cost any money. They cost huge amounts of money. And that's why those of you who live in the suburbs, you have to look at your fire district costs. And if you don't have time to look at your fire district costs, drive by your fire halls. Drive by them. See the flat screen TVs and the fantastic vehicles in there. That costs money. So the idea would be to say, for the governing body, to say, this is how much it costs us to have a volunteer fire department. Why don't we take that money, or a portion of that money, and contract with the city of Syracuse to say, you know what, we need trained firemen on staff from 8 o'clock at night to 8 o'clock in the morning. And then you would just pay us the costs. We're not looking for a profit. And then eventually we would get to a point where you would see that we could figure out a way to cover this area. As evidenced by that, and again, you all are well read, so I'm sure you didn't miss this story in the newspaper. Currently in the city of Syracuse, our fire department covers Okra, Van Dyne, Crucible, where else am I missing? Krause-Hinds, Community Hospital, all outside the city of Syracuse. So there was a fire at Okra 2 weeks ago. And the first fire department on the list was a volunteer fire department. They did not show. They, quote, scratched. The first fire department that showed was the city of Syracuse's fire department, put the fire out, got it under control. After that was done, the chief of the volunteer fire department showed up, saw everything was under control, and moved on. Well, that's a recognition, a very strong story about how important it is to have a professional fire department. And the fact that we are already doing this, but if you cut our sales tax, we're not going to do it because we won't be able to do it. And think about the resources of this county and what would have happened had Okra burned up or, you know, not had a fire department show up. All of you who have garbage, which is all of you, you would have been sitting on a lot of it because it wouldn't have been able to go.
When my children went to Nottingham High School, it was the premier high school in the county. Now it has a 50% graduation rate. Until the educational system in Syracuse becomes first rate, we won't be able to attract more people who move to places primarily for good education for their children. Have you given some thought or have you had conversation with people about merging, let's say, the Fayetteville-Manlius school system with the Syracuse system, just to give you one minor example?
No, I have not. But I agree with your premise, which is we will never be a great city or a great region until we have a great school district. I have said very publicly that the status quo of the city school district is unacceptable, and I've said I'm looking for ways to change that. One of the ways, one of the models to change that is mayoral control. I said I'm looking at it, I want to have a public discussion about it. I have not done anything or taken any action to move it towards that direction. I think that we have an incredible opportunity with Say Yes to Education to change the dynamic and also to be in the forefront of changing urban public education, because the problems that plague us in Syracuse also plague Chicago, New York, Newark, Los Angeles. But what we have is a program and experts who are putting in millions and millions of dollars to try to change that. We'll continue to support that. I personally, with everything that they ask me to do, which is significant, and everything that we possibly can do, which is not as much financially as I would like to be able to do. But the governance of the school system is something that will continue to be a topic of discussion in public and private places. And all of the problems that I have in the city of Syracuse are 2 degrees of separation related from poor test results, poor education system. Our crime rate, if you look at the people who are committing crimes and the victims of those crimes, there is a very strong correlation to a lack of a high school diploma. And if you look at the stability of our neighborhoods, to your point, we see an incredible, people are very happy with their elementary schools, and rightfully so, and then they get very nervous at middle school. And you see this mass migration out of the city when their children reach middle school age. And then when their children leave home, they come back into the city. So in terms of stability of neighborhoods and property values, you know, all of that would help if we had a school system that was performing better than it currently is.
Mayor, I very much like your repetition of the concept of getting Syracuse once again to be a great city. But it would seem to me that you can't have a great city with major office buildings in the downtown area empty. And also, I think it's very helpful if to be a great city, you have headquarters here, as witness the Carrier Dome and the Krause-Hinds Concerts Theater and so forth. You had Onondaga Savings Bank move out in addition to the others. Do you have thoughts as to how we can fill those buildings and how we can once again have headquarters here? There's so much here that would be appropriate for headquarters. How do we do that?
We changed the business dynamics and the practices in Albany. The Albany's policies that they have put into place have made the fixed costs of doing business in New York State three times as high as any of our neighboring states or other places. So when you look at how high, how expensive our utilities are, for example, when you look at how high workers' comp is, when you look at how high property taxes, and you know, Albany's response back has been, well, let's, here's an empire zone, here's an empire benefit program. I think that's akin to saying, you know, you're starving and here's a little piece of cotton candy that'll get you through. And I have said repeatedly, often, to friends of mine in Albany and foes of mine in Albany, I don't want any of that. Change the basic dynamics. And one of the basic dynamics that they could change is how we fund Medicaid. If we could fund Medicaid like all most other states are funding it, that would relieve tremendous pressure off the county, which would relieve pressure off of our property taxes, and all of a sudden we would be competitive in a fixed cost of business that we are not competitive in. Part of my job as mayor, that I believe my job as mayor, is to be an advocate for my city and for my people and for my region, and that's my advocacy. And there are not a few people who look at me askance and say, wait a second, aren't you a Democrat? I say, yeah, I'm a Democrat. But you know what? I'm also not dumb. So when I come in and Krauss-Hinds comes and says, or Bristol-Myers says, you know, we'd like to expand, but look, if we expand in Canada, our costs are less. You know, and my God, Canada, they have socialized medicine. Oh, we expand in Canada, our costs are less. We go over the border to Pennsylvania, our property taxes are less, our utility taxes are less. What are you going to do for me? Oh, well, we've got this great Empire Zone program. It may, you know, expire in 3 years or 2 years, but yeah, stick with us. But, you know, we are at the bottom of economic development trends, but I'm making that argument everywhere I go.
What are the tax and economic development consequences of finishing or not finishing the present Destiny or Carousel or whatever it is up there?
They're significant. The Carousel Mall, Destiny, whatever you'd like to call it, is sits on the largest piece of taxable land in the city of Syracuse and Onondaga. It is not paying taxes. Is not scheduled to pay taxes for 30 years. It is currently also not generating sales tax, or it's not, the expansion is obviously not generating sales tax. And there has been a great deal of public resources, money in particular, that has been put into that package, and it is not a performing asset. Needs to be a performing asset.
There has been an increase of refugees in the Syracuse city, or the Syracuse city of Syracuse, and service agencies are really trying to do a good job maximizing their resources. But what resources, additional resources, are available from the city to these new city residents?
Well, we have, I've talked with Paul Driscoll, the head of the neighborhood and business development, about housing programs that these individuals could be involved in. I think that refugees are a tremendous opportunity for us to, you know, stabilize our neighborhoods and bring them into our community. I mean, it's the history of the American culture to do that. And so we are working hand in hand with refugee resettlement services and places in particular on the north side, trying to help the culture clash that inevitably happens. But in terms of direct resources that are available from the city, there are not a lot.
Mayor, early on in your administration, you made that very gutsy call on Say Yes to Education, that you would commit to that for anybody graduating. In any way, does that impact with your issues of the sales tax? Are you going to be able to sustain that if the sales tax is not divided the way you hope it will be?
If we cannot get 25% of the sales tax, there will be nothing left untouched. I mean, it's inconceivable that there will be anything. And again, everything from snow plowing to trash pickup to police protection to fire protection, every single thing will be impacted.
there is an attitude on the part of the legislature that can be kind of demonstrated by this. A number of years ago, one of the members of the county legislature commented that he was tired of having the city get it, have his hands in the pockets of the county. And there was no one who, in effect, rejected his particular comment. So what can you do as far as changing this attitude, which is still, I think, prevalent among the members of the county legislature, and the fact that they're trying to take more money from the city in order to safeguard other things may be a major, major problem.
Well, you know, I think that there has been a change among certain county legislators about that, and there's new county legislators. And what I have been doing is explaining to them the numbers, the facts and figures, and saying these are not our numbers. When I gave my presentation in front of the Sales Tax Committee and I talked about our flatlining of economic development and I talked about the recommendations in terms of government modernization and efficiency and spend more money on eds and meds, I did not use one. I did a PowerPoint because you can't give a presentation without a PowerPoint. All of the information that I used, that I gave to them, was pulled from the MDA's Essential New York Initiative, the Onondaga Citizens League on Government Consolidation, 2020's studies. I've said to them, you are right to be suspicious because I'm the mayor and it's my job to advocate for the city of Syracuse. So let me tell you why you shouldn't be suspicious, because all this information that I'm giving you is from independent, nonpartisan, third-party sources. So look at it all and go ask them. The MDA is behind the city and the county executive's joint proposal. The Chamber of Commerce is behind the city and the county's joint sales tax proposal. University Hill, Dr. Smith, Dr. Cronenberg, St. Joe's Hospital, all of our largest employers have sent letters, have made phone calls, Nancy Cantor, have all said it is important. The mayor is not just trying to advocate for the city for by the mayor's sake that she's mayor. Here's the rationale. So I have spent a great deal of time, will continue to, explaining the rationale, pointing out that they're from objective sources, and asking people like yourselves to help me do that. They are nervous, and appropriately so, I think, because they're saying, look, if we take sales tax money for our Medicaid burden, then we're going to have to cut the towns and villages and the city out. And people are going to be furious with us. Our constituents are going to be furious with us. And I say to them, well, first off, you have to either take sales tax money for your Medicaid burden or you've got to raise property taxes. So you can't get away from this choice about raising revenue. The second is, I say to them, the public is hungry for change and for government modernization and consolidation. So you will be heroes by forcing this issue. Let me give you just a classic example of this. Sunday's paper, there was a little squib about the Village of Solvay. This year, the Village of Solvay is giving the mayor and the trustees a 2% pay raise. In a time of tremendous scarcity of resources, the village has enough money to give the elected officials pay raises. Why? Because their sales tax helps them mask what their services cost. And that masking effect and putting all those resources towards government has allowed government to get very, very fat in the suburbs, and as a consequence has made our engines of economic development get starved. So it's up to you to tell your county legislators, we don't want that anymore, and we want consolidation. We don't want more town government. We don't want more village government. For that matter, we don't want more city government. And the mayor's saying you're not going to get more city government. You're going to get better city government. And you're going to get economic development growth because I will continue to provide the services that the five largest employers of our region, who are all nonprofit, need to thrive.
I have a comment and a question. First of all, it's very refreshing to see that you and the county executive seem to have good open communications, and I think we all in the room hope it continues. The question I have is, what is your position on Interstate 81 through the city?
Thank you for, yes, Joni and I have a very good relationship, and people have been commenting to me and to us about it, and it's very easy. I have more problems than most people could imagine. I need friends. And the county executive is a friend who recognizes the health of the city is vital to the health of the county. And I think most importantly recognizes that, guess what, the city of Syracuse is in the county of Onondaga. So that's, you know, the basis of our working together is that we're both trying to get to the same goal. The question, the answer to your question about my position on 81 is I do not think 81 should be an elevated highway through the middle of the city. I do not think that the city is a place where you should provide opportunities for people to get from north to south as quickly as possible. That a city is a place of neighborhoods and people and spaces where you allow strangers to come together and communicate and interact. And 81 does not facilitate that.
Thank you, Mayor Minor, for being with us today. We'll see you again at the OCL meeting in June.